Welcome to Conversations in Equine Science. My name is Kate Acton and I'm joined by Nancy McLean, and this is the podcast where we take equine research and try and make it accessible to horse owners and enthusiasts alike. Remember that with each topic we discuss, it's important to get professional advice before implementing any of the strategies.
This week, Kate and I have a guest, Christine Sanchez, and she's been very active in thoroughbred racing as far as racing and training and breeding of racehorses. And Christine, it's so good to have you here in all of your experience in the racing industry is so interesting. And I'm going to go ahead and let you talk about yourself for a while to the listeners.
Oh, thank you, Nancy. And thank you, Kate. It's really nice to be here today. I've been involved in the racing industry for over 15 years. And I bought my first racehorse at an auction. It was very, very exciting, very nerve-wracking. and so from that point, I was really interested in the care of the racehorse. People warned me about the expenses. So I got really involved in trying to understand like the injuries and became very proactive in prevention. And as the years went on, and being exposed to it, and then having resources and getting those vet bills and trying to understand, you know, how did we get to this point? That led me to really be focused on prevention. And so over the years, I've done a lot of research, pulled, you know, research papers from different scientists and universities. And so my main focus was really it turned into understanding the gut and how that was the foundation of, you know, of horses, but also the importance of racehorses. And, you know, we see a lot of racehorses with ulcers. And so I was trying to figure out, well, why does that, you know, why does 85% of racehorses have ulcers, and, you know, what we could do to prevent that. And then I learned about the immune system and how important the immune system is and how that starts from the gut, but also the focus on, you know, how that is tied to bone development, bone reforming, and, you know, where we see, you know, injuries that horses have, and unfortunately the catastrophic injuries due to bone fatigue, how all of, you know, what, how it's, where it starts and how it can be prevented. And so I was in my research and just reaching out to people and creating a network, I found Dr. Shell, and he was so kind to spend over 2 hours with me, and we developed this relationship. And then the next day I woke up and looking at my email, and he had presented a full, letter with his research and his plan, his dedication to the thoroughbred. And I was just amazed. And he taught me the two tests that he created, the gut bacterial test and the oxidative stress test. And so from then I'm moving forward, I just really understand it, and I'm looking to promote it and teach people that this is something that we need to look at, and that it's so simple. And maybe it's too simple, you know, for people to wrap their mind around.
It's just fascinating, Christine. Like, I think Nancy and I touched on the gut brain axis in a previous episode a while back, but it didn't really resonate with me the way these papers did that you sent and the work that Dr. Shell has done. Like, I think as well, it's at a time where at the moment I've been doing other research canine wise into the whole gut immune system connection, and this has really just fascinated me about how if we can get that balance right, we can actually prevent a lot of these issues or these diseases. And some of the ones he mentioned when you forwarded that proposal letter was behavioral concerns, soft tissue injuries, foot soreness, infectious disease, immune related concerns, then, like you said, digestive, gastric ulcers, orthopedic problems, inflammatory airway disease, exercise-induced pulmonary hemorrhage, metabolic abnormalities. And I'm sure there's even more that it's linked to. But I think we're so aware in equine that nutrition is the basis of a good horse. Like, I think people are starting to get really switched on to, okay, we have to feed them right. We have to get the food right, and then we're going to get the horse right. But where are people kind of going astray with that? Is it more that there's this over supplementation, or there's too much kind of tinkering about with the food that we're giving them? How are we leading to, I suppose, the gut biome being so out of sync?
It's both. I definitely, you know, having, you know, dear friends that are trainers and, you know, being on the backside a lot, I do see that they're bombarded by different supplement companies and they want to do what's right for the horse. And so there is over supplementation, and Dr. Shell talks about that. So it's really, you know, taking a look at each individual horse and see, you know, what that horse needs. And so if you are giving too many supplements by these biomarker tests that Dr. Shell created, it gives you you're looking inside the horse and you're able to see what the horse needs or what it doesn't need. And then when it comes to, you know, the food, the too much sugar, you know, a lot of sweet feed is, you know, produced. And then it's not, we don't give the horses as much whole foods as they need to. And, you know, we forget that they're not like the wild, you know, horses that can graze all day and they pick and they know exactly what they need, you know, to survive. You know, horses, you know, especially racetrack horses, they're in an environment, and that with that added stress, we have to be very careful of what we feed them, because then that could affect their gut. And then when that's in balance, then we start to see these issues. And so that's what Dr. Shell, you know, taught me. And that's where he saw that issue. And when he created his study, and then he created these two biomarkers, the one gut mark biomarker and the oxidative stress biomarker, really can show an owner and a trainer exactly what's going on inside that horse, and most importantly, how to fix it.
Now, sorry, Nancy, just those two tests that you mentioned as well, Christine, they can be repeated, can't they?
Yeah.
Multiple times, definitely. Until you're in the right range.
Exactly. So where I see it coming from an owner, when we had this discussion and he shared the study with me, his goal for the gut, we're going to talk about poop, the poop test. A trainer would be trained to then see exactly what that horse's poop needs to look like. Well, you wouldn't have to really do that test on a regular basis, because a groom would learn, okay, this is what it's supposed to look like. So if it changes, you then can run the test to say, oh, something's going on, you know, let's look at it. But the oxidative stress is definitely something that I would encourage trainers to do and owners to do on a regular basis, because your horse, as they're training, so if they increase their training to get ready for a race, their body is changing, their oxidative stress levels. When you start adding, you go from galloping to, you know, breezes to actual races, you should be looking at the horse and seeing how they're adjusting to, you know, to the stress of racing and competing. And so if being an owner, I would do this on a regular basis, at least once a month, to see how my horse is adjusting to the training and competing.
And Christine, do you do those tests on your horses, or have you trained the groom to do it? If you could just tell the listeners what that oxidative stress test involves.
So the oxidative stress test, you would pull the blood and you would send that directly to Dr. Shell, where he has a lab, and then he runs that test, and he's looking very specific to comparing that to the biomarker. So to kind of go a little bit back, what he did is he was able to, with his own lab, have retired racehorses that had that perfect oxidative stress level, and he created that marker. Then he went to the racetrack, and he had 15 horses in training, and he drew their blood on a regular basis, and he was able to then see and measure, you know, what the horse's levels were, and then get that horse to that that biomarker where oxidative stress levels were normal.
And, wow.
Yeah. Okay. Isn't it fascinating? Lactic acid, all the things that is going on in the horse that we don't know. A term in our, everyone knows in this industry, when a horse races or does a work, the term is used, do they bounce back? Well, that's a simple term, but really what that is, what they don't understand is that you're waiting for that horse to see that oxidative stress level. Did they use too much the free radicals compared to, if it was healthy, did it bounce back well?
All too often, pain in ridden horses is labeled as bad behavior. The apparently sound horse is naughty, lazy, difficult, explosive, spooky, nappy, and more. These labels are wrong. Pain impacts all aspects of a horse's performance, including its partnership with the rider and its potential to progress. It does not always create lameness. Relieving pain can lead to greater potential, a deeper partnership, and improved performance. In the recently published book, Harmonious Horsemanship, Use of the Ridden Horse Ethogram to Optimize Potential Partnership and Performance, Sue Dyson and Sue Palmer share their professional knowledge and experience. Check it out. It can be bought from Troubadour Book Publishing or Amazon.
So basically the goal for Dr. Schell, it was to create these two biomarkers so that a horse could go into training and have early detection of issues that would be facing the horse based on if their behavior changed or if they were starting to show lameness. But the focus was to catch it early. So the fecal test will give an idea of exactly what's going on with the horse. And also if a horse needs medication for any reason, you would want to run the test to see if there's any imbalance and how to correct it before it creates any major issues, for the horse. So that was very important. And that it should be something that, at least once a month should be done so that as the horse increases in their training and their competition, you want to manage that. You want to see if there's any adjustments to what's going on in the gut.
Got it. That is so, I think the thing that stuck out at me with the oxidative stress is the EIPH. It could be related to inflammation and oxidative stress. And that would possibly explain why you're doing so good with a horse. And then all of a sudden you get bleeding. And, you know, they're running, no issues. And then like with Greta, my 27-year-old mare, she bled. It was a humid and the dew point was unbelievable. It was a stormy day. Storms were brewing. Mm-hmm. She ran. She won the race, out of the blue. And I think it's the inflammation and oxidative stress that occurred because she was having trouble getting oxygen out of the air anyway on mm-hmm. a day like that. And that would possibly, from a welfare point of view, maybe put temperature, humidity, and dew point on our radar for maybe not having afternoon races when they reach certain criteria. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. The industry's been, doing a lot of research on trying to solve the, EIPH, situation and what causes it. And again, there's medication to prevent it. But in our industry, we're starting to see where two-year-olds can no longer race on Lasix. And mm-hmm. so that creates issues. So again, that's why I was very proactive with prevention, because you don't want to see a decline in our population of racehorses. You don't want to see early retirement. You want to see, horses competing at their highest level. And so oxidative stress, when you understand the inflammation, inflammation will go through, as he, Dr. Schell mentioned, it'll go throughout the body. So if the horse already is susceptible, so weakness in the lungs and the inflammation, the capillaries, then you're going to definitely see bleeding. You're going to see it in joints, ligaments, and that's where it starts. And the weakening of, you know, of tendons and ligaments can then unfortunately turn into more serious injuries. So, but it all starts with inflammation. And that's why measuring the oxidative stress and what you can do to replenish, because these are athletes. So they're going to have a decrease automatically with oxidative stress just from the training. So you want to make sure that it's being replaced and it's balanced. And then doing that, you're going to prevent a lot of injuries, and the horses will be able to race longer. They'll be able to retire healthier and move on to new careers. And that's also very important to me.
So I think, too, the other point of that is when you do have a horse that bleeds, automatically they go on antibiotics for 10 to 14 days. And then guess what? That's depleting the good bacteria,
right,
as well. So you end up repeating that same cycle,
yes,
of attacking that biome, you know, the good garden being torn down and overcome by the weeds, so to speak, if you look at a biome as a garden, you know. But it's really food for thought when I read through his research. Now, has he made any attempt to do a peer-reviewed paper on these thoughts, or is he at a stage where he knows this works and he's just encouraging people to, you know, do the work that can kind of tell them at what stage their horse is at?
Yeah, I think it's the second one. He's been doing this for 28 years, and he did his own study. He has his own lab, and creating those biomarkers, that's where he's really been dedicating his time and, you know, working as those tests, you know, come in, and all kinds, not only thoroughbreds, but he receives samples from, you know, many different horses and from other disciplines, the hunter jumpers, the rodeo horses, any athletic horse, you know, needs to be looked at this level. And, but the thoroughbreds, he's very involved in aftercare for thoroughbreds. And he was discouraged with our industry to see the condition that they come, you know, when they retire, what they look like. And so he wanted to really make a change. He wanted horses to retire and be healthier so they can move on to, you know, another career without having to have a long recovery period. And that's my belief too. And so definitely these two tests done at this, you know, together, or oxidative stress for sure when a horse is in training would prevent a lot of injuries and save owners, again, as an owner, save a lot of money. You don't want to have so many, you know, a high cost of vet bills where you have to leave the industry, and you want to do what's right by the horse. And, you know, our industry, there's a lot of testing, you know, physical testing, making sure that the horses are, you know, healthy and ready to, you know, to race. So you don't want your horse to get flagged. You want to be ahead of that because you've invested a lot of money and you care about your horse. So it's, again, the focus really needs to be on early prevention and managing the horse.
Yep.
And our industry, we don't look inside the horse. And that's where these, you know, Dr. Schell with his study, that's what he did. And now with these tests, we can look inside and what's going on in our horse and, you know, correct it and keep them,
you
on
know, the- so often in the thoroughbred industry, when a horse begins to look unthrifty or backs off its feed, what do we do? We worm it.
Right.
And if 2 weeks go by and we don't see a shine, what do? We worm it again. You know? Mm-hmm. So this makes so much sense. But can you talk a little bit about the fecal test? Kate, did you have any questions on the oxidative stress test?
No, that was perfect. I have some questions on the fecal one. If Christine can talk us a little bit through it first.
Yeah. So
what his goal is to, you know, to look at the bacteria and with that biomarker with from the healthy horse, you know, the gut, he's able to look at the lactic acid, you know, the bacterial levels. And he actually shows samples of what it looks like normal and then what it looks like, the color, how it turn has black dots, it has, you know, when it shows the lactic acid. And then at that point, you can actually see what's going on in that horse's gut, and then you're able to correct it because you know what it needs. And that's what I found very fascinating, that it was so simple that you know, running these tests, you can see exactly what the issues are with the horse going on, you know, in their digestive system.
And he had mentioned in the paper as well, Christine, that I suppose in today's age, there's a trend towards using an increased amount of commercial grains, yes, synthetic supplements, and these are all correlating with higher bacterial counts. Mm-hmm. And then I noted that he was saying, like, the potential interventions to try and help these horses is considerations for reducing these processed grains. But how does one practically do that with a thoroughbred horse that's racing?
Well, that's where his expertise comes in, because the tests, the results that he provides would give an idea of what the horse needs to be fed. So more, you know, the whole foods, is what he calls it. And, you know, when you understand that the horse's gut is in perfect condition, they might not need as much grain, right? And a lot of trainers think, oh, you to give them energy, they need to have, you know, these grains, when the reality is that it might only need to be more alfalfa or more grass, you know, measuring that protein and that whole foods. And I know, you know, I've come across horses that can't have alfalfa, right? That they need, it's too much protein. And I was always like really interested, like, wow, how these are horses and they're herbivores. How could they, you know, be allergic to alfalfa, but alfalfa, you know, created colic issues. So, I mean, that's just one example of, you know, you looking at the horse and how they process, you know, what is that metabolical, you know, system and, you know, going on within that horse. And so some horses definitely would, you know, show that they would need less grain and just more, you know, whole foods.
Yeah. I'm it's interesting that we're hay farmers and alfalfa has low sugar. It's right. One of the lower sugar hays you can feed. And my supervisor from Edinburgh, who's at Michigan State in this country, he actually trains and exercise rides his quarter horses, and they only are on forage. Mm-hmm. And they're running and they are winning, and mm-hmm. they're able to do that fast quarter mile.
Right.
And they don't lose weight. They don't look thin. I mean, he is just running them as performance horses on forage diet only. Mm-hmm. And so it's incredible. It can be done. It's just tradition, I think.
Right, and it is tradition, and it's a tradition that goes back, you know, hundreds of years. And you know, another example, which you mentioned, like different horses. So we have, even within the thoroughbred, you have your sprinters. So you have your horses that have more muscle mass, and they're insulin, you know, they're different. They process everything differently. Where a long distance horse genetically is more long distance, those horses need to be fed a different diet, because that mm-hmm. when they're in training, their bodies react to training very differently. So, and that these tests would show that would show exactly how the horse is processing its food and what adjustments need to be made.
So Christine, if listeners have a horse that, you know, they appear to be having intestinal problems, performance problems, how would they submit a sample to Dr. Shell for analysis?
So on his website, Second Vet, everything is there. I could even, if you want to share my email address, I would have believe, you know, guide people. But on his website, there's the instructions for both and how to send it, and then the fees. So it's, for me, being an owner and spending tens of thousands on vet bills, it's a total of $275. So $100 for the fecal and $175 for the oxidative stress. And I just think that that's just a great investment for maintenance. And like I said, really taking a look inside your horse and what's going on and preventing injuries. And just having a happy, healthy horse competing at, you know, the highest level. So, and then he sends the results back and then gives information, you know, what needs to be corrected. And, you know, horses, as we know, they don't really, I wish they could talk, but they basically hide sometimes of their symptoms. And that's another important point, is to do this on a regular basis, because your horse could easily be keeping their issues silent. And so, you know, going in and taking a look is very important.
I had one more thing to ask, Kate. I don't want to hog the conversation.
No, I'm just enthralled by all of it. I'm very much enjoying.
Well, I was wondering too, if people have a geriatric horse that has metabolic issues. You know, Kate and I were looking at a genetic study that, you know, these horses, sometimes metabolic issues are in their gene or their genomics. So, you know, I think people with horses who are having metabolic health issues would even benefit, even if it's just a trail riding horse or a pleasure horse. Yes. And I can't tell you how lately, and I'm talking maybe the past 5 or 10 years, when I walk on a farm to, you know, look at a horse's hoof health and maybe make changes to their trimming, it's amazing how many horses are now deemed metabolic.
Right.
And it's like an epidemic. And not all of them are overweight. Some of them are underweight.
Exactly.
You know, so I just thought, you know, I would definitely have no qualms to do this for my performance horses, but I would gladly do it for that fat little Welsh pony that's in my pasture.
We're heading into spring. So, you know, I live in California, so I don't have the opportunity of the green pastures, but I know all my friends, you know, in Kentucky and Maryland and those areas, you know, where when spring comes, the horses consume when the grass changes, right? It sets off, you know, spring colic and different issues. So that's another example of, you know, as the seasons change, testing your horse and making sure, you know, what is going on inside, that that everything is balanced and the horse is adjusting. So that you can prevent, you know, the colics and the other, you know, issues that a horse can face just with the seasons changing and the grass changing. The other thing I wanted to mention that you brought up when you were talking about hoofs and back to, you know, to the gut, laminitis is a huge issue, and it's something that still is not, there's still a lot of research needed to find out how to, you know, prevent it, but it does start in the gut. And I think that, you know, when a horse has an injury, if their gut is already out of balance, that leads to, you know, unfortunately, laminitis, to where it could be life-threatening to the horse. So if the gut is managed and unfortunately there is an injury, the tendency for a horse to develop laminitis would be decreased. And Dr. Shell also talks about laminitis and the connection with the gut and oxidative stress.
Wow, that, you know, I can't tell you how many patients I've had with thin soles that are coming off the track from the high glucose diets, and they've got long toe, low heel trims, and, you know, they usually want to pull their shoes, and you just can't pull the shoes and let them go because their soles, it's just like stretching it with silly putty. You know, it just gets paper thin. So you always have to do a gradual correction, and I usually use some form of booting or glue on shoes to help the horse mm-hmm. get through that phase. But it's all kind of connecting all of these issues, you know. Yes. So, but
and I do think on that as well, like, I suppose the more we become aware and we're trying to reduce this stress, we do really have to evaluate environment. And, you know, yes. it was mentioned, I don't know, was it Dr. Shell's proposal or one of the papers, but these animals are, you know, some of them are being kept for 22 hours a day in a stall, and it's so unnatural. And that's not going to produce a healthy gut or a healthy biome when that kind of ongoing stress is present.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, he does mention that in his paper. And there's been other studies that have come out with the same thing, and that but again, no solution. It's Dr. Shell who created the solution, you know, for that, and a mm-hmm. way to look inside and manage it. And that's really what it is. It's managing, right? You're managing the horse's health, and doing your best to prevent minor injuries and definitely catastrophic injuries.
That is amazing. Well, thank you so much for sending me the papers, and I was able to share them with Kate. And then I do want to reiterate that Dr. Shell's website is www.secondvet.com. And then, Christine, I will put your email address on the homepage for if people have any questions, they can go ahead and shoot you an email, especially about the process for submitting samples.
Yes, I'd be happy to answer any questions and help with that. And I just encourage, you know, people to that pick one, start with one horse. I think we just have to, you know, start small. And then once you see the results, then it becomes just an everyday part of a barn and training. And I know that there'll be a lot of positive results from it.
Well, and tell Dr. Shell, thank you so much for allowing you to share his information.
I will definitely let him know.
He has found. And I'm just really amazed how all of these illnesses are, I guess we should call them issues, that I see in every horse, whether pasture pet or mm-hmm. performance horse, how it's a vicious circle, because sometimes feeding a probiotic can actually be the wrong probiotic and be increasing the imbalance.
Yes.
So I can't, you know, I always tell our listeners, just don't pull a probiotic off the shelf. You have to kind of know what you're needing, you know, otherwise that is just going to create a bigger imbalance and kind of creating a mess, so to speak. It's amazing we don't totally screw up these animals.
Right.
You know, so, yeah. But anyway,
and they're like our children. I mean, my horses love sweet feed, right? I mean, it's like candy to them, but you have to be the parent and say, oh, no, I'm sorry. This isn't good for you. And you know, find a different solution. Like, my horses love sweet potatoes. So that's their treat. Wow. They like blueberries. That's a treat for bananas. I have one horse that loves bananas. So, but they do love it, but it's, unfortunately, it's not good for them. Too much sugar, too much molasses.
And that fat little pony gets a grazing muzzle. So,
right.
And lots and lots of exercise. So, but
lots
anyway.
Of encouragement.
Yeah, yes. So, well, Kate, thanks for joining in. And Christine, thank you for giving your time.
Thank you so much, Christine. That's been incredible. It's a wealth of information and a whole new way now that I'm looking at all species.
Oh, yeah. Well, great. I'm so happy that I can, you know, contribute and help and just getting the word out, and for you to be able to, for the opportunity for this podcast and to get the word out and educate, that means a lot to me. And I know Dr. Shell as well.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, Christine, and I'll be in touch.
Thanks,
okay,
guys.
Take
care.
Have a wonderful day. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.